The following program is sponsored by Dan Witham, LPL Financial.
The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
The opinions represented during this show may not necessarily represent those of KRMG or Cox Media Group.
Your host is Dan Witham, a financial advisor with offices at 8516 East 101st Street, Suite C in Tulsa. His office phone number is 918-398-8387. Dan is a branch manager with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA SIPC. Now here's Money Talk on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
And good Sunday morning to you. My name's Russell Mills, and this is Money Talk. In the studio with me, Mr. Steve Money, no relation, and Mr. Dan Witham, your host for Money Talk. If you got questions for him today, text him at 95920. We start every week by Dan announcing the book of the week, which you can get absolutely free. Dan, what do we got going?
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. The book this week is The Little Book That Still Beats the Market by Joel Greenblatt. We've given away this book before, Russell.
Ah.
Are you familiar with it?
I did not read that one.
Okay.
But I know you've done little books of lots of things.
That's right. Joel Greenblatt is one of the characters in the movie The Big Short, as I was asking Steve about before we started the show.
Which is a movie you highly recommend. That's about the mortgage bubble.
Meltdown, yes. The meltdown in
08. 2008.
And Joel Greenblatt is the author of this book, and he's a character in that movie. And he's actually a pretty principal character, a pretty main character in the movie. And he runs a firm called Gotham Capital. Gotta love that name, Steve.
Oh, man.
Gotham Capital.
Is Batman an investor?
That's right. It's a Batman Investing 101.
Does he send a bat signal out when it's time to invest or
well,
something?
Well, I don't know, but I'll tell you what, he ought to, because his annualized returns for his strategy are over 40% per year for 20 years in a row.
He may have this down.
Which is not a bad idea. And I've started tracking his strategy, started investing using his philosophy this last week or so. And so I'm tracking some of the stocks to see how they're doing. And I will tell you, they're annihilating the market.
Wow.
They're up six times what the market is. So very short period I've been tracking it, but I'm going to keep tracking it and trading it and see how it does. This is a great book. It has an automatic system that he teaches you, and we're going to go over some of this methodology today on the show and talk about it. But he's averaged returns of 40% a year for 20 years. It's a simple formula. It's a kind of a value and growth combination formula that he uses, and we'll go into the mechanics of it on the show today. But we'll send you a free copy of this book if you'd like it. Just give me a call, and he provides what's called a magic formula. His formula is called the Magic Formula Investing, and you can Google it, and there's all kinds of articles written about his strategy and the returns and things like that. And it's probably not magic, but I do think it's a pretty good formula. I have to admit, I do like the formula, and I've used it. Steve, you'll like this. He uses sixth grade math.
Wow. Something. Probably a little above my level, but I'm impressed.
Something even we could probably understand here on the show. Sixth grade math and no technical terms. I have the book. I've read the book several times. There's no technical terms in it. It's a very short book. It's probably 120 pages, 110 pages or so.
Oh,
so
really?
It's not a lengthy
quick read
diatribe like The Intelligent Investor is, which is 700 pages long, Benjamin Graham's book. Anyhow, this is an excellent book. We'll send you a free copy of it. All you have to do is give me a call at 918-398-8387. That's 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and your address. It is the weekend. See, we'll get our voicemail. Just leave us your name and your address, and you get our voicemail, and we'll send the book out to you absolutely free. And it's called The Little Book That Still Beats the Market. It's by Joel Greenblatt, and I highly recommend the book. I do like the book. It's a proven strategy that has lasted for decades. He has data going back to the 1980s, I believe, in there in his book. And so he's been trading it for a while. And if you watch The Big Short, you'll get to see him. There's a guy named Joel in the movie who's running the firm, Joel Greenblatt, which is who this gentleman is. And in the movie, he's quite a controversial subject. He does very, very well in the movie investing with Michael Burry, I believe was the guy's name, who was the main character in The Big Short. I'm going from memory here, but it's a really good movie. I do like the movie. If you're interested in the mortgage business and what happened in 08, and the movie's pretty good, I do recommend the movie.
You know, I'm stuck back on the average is 40%.
Right.
So
not bad.
So sometimes it'll be more than that, of course.
Right.
But even on the low side, to average at 40,
that's a pretty good return.
The low side's not bad.
And the nice thing about this is if you choose to implement this portfolio, you can do it with 5 stocks, you can do it with 10 stocks, you can do it with 20, you can do it with 30 stocks, as many stocks as you want to. So you can expand the number to fit the portfolio size. You know, if I have a $1 million portfolio, I'm going to do 30 stocks. If I have a $50,000 portfolio, I'm going to do 5 or 10 stocks probably.
Gotcha. Yep.
And I can adjust it to the client, which is I like very much, because not everybody wants to have 30 stocks in their portfolio,
right.
You know, and not everybody can. So we can adjust the size of the portfolio and diversify it depending on the size of the account, which I think is an excellent idea. And so I like the strategy very much. And we'll go into it a little bit here on the show. I've got some data for you to go over and some things. We're going to do math and some ratios, Steve. I know you're excited about that.
Ooh,
ratios.
Steve gets excited.
We got to grab the abacus, bring it in here, see what we can
do. Get a slide rule? You got a slide rule.
Slide rule, yeah.
Hey, we put a man on the moon with a slide rule.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I got a web browser in Google, so I'll take that approach.
That's true, and I've got a scientific calculator on my phone now. We've got things a little bit easier nowadays. I got to say hi to my peeps out in Creek County.
Oh, yeah?
I got to work yesterday.
Yeah.
Got to ride around with one of the canine officers, one of the corporals on duty. And we had a dog companion with us, great little dog named Ranger. Gorgeous, gorgeous little dog. Very, very sweet dog. He doesn't bite. He's not he just tracks and picks up, you know, drug scents and things like that. But he doesn't bite
or
chase
a tracker
people.
Than a
right.
tackler.
He's not a big German Shepherd like some of those dogs are. But it was great. He's a great dog. I enjoyed myself very much. And I always like being out there and working, doing patrol and doing my thing. And, Steve, I want to talk to you about, do you remember, I'm going to bring up another movie here, Moneyball, which is a movie we talked about a long time ago, and I gave away the DVD for the movie Once Upon a Time.
Yes.
Brad Pitt stars in this movie. Russell, you probably know who it's about. Billy Bean. Does that name ring a bell?
Is he a sports manager?
He was the manager of the Oakland A's back in the day, and he's changed kind of the way the game of baseball was run, because he focused on just one variable, which was called on-base percentage. Okay, so he wanted higher players. He didn't care how they were in the field. All he cared about was how often did they get on base. He didn't care if they got a walk or a hit or they got hit by a pitch. You know, he didn't care how they got hit as long as they got on base.
Is this where Billy Ball comes from?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's what Billy Ball is, yes. Okay. And so there was, I can't remember the guy that wrote the book.
I don't know either.
There was a guy that wrote a book about that was based on, that they took this book and they basically, gosh, I can't remember the name, but it was a statistics book, but it was all about, you know, on-base percentage. And basically what they did was they applied this principle to the Oakland A's, and they did very, very well with it. And the reason I mention all this is they boil baseball down to one variable, which is on-base percentage, right? They just focus on that one thing. And if you think about it, that's what investing comes down to, which is all about one variable, which in my opinion is a matter of self-control. If you can control your own actions, then you can really control your outcome. You have a large amount of control over your outcome. And I'll give you an example of why. The number one fund, Steve, for the year 2000 through 2010 was CGM Focus Fund, top performing mutual fund in the country.
Okay.
For the decade of the 2000s, right? 2000 through 2010. The fund averaged 18.29% per year return over that period.
All right.
It beat its nearest competitor by 3.4% per year.
Wow, that's
a killing it.
Yeah.
They were killing it. So that was the fund with the average highest return. Do you know what fund also had the lowest investor return over the same period?
I'm suspecting the same one.
The same fund. Yes. -11% average investor return over that period. You want to know how they did that?
I'm dying to find out.
Who got the money?
Well, I know who got the money.
They waited until the fund ran up in 07. Where it had, you know, 7 years in a row of great performance. In 2007, the fund was up 80%. And then the fund received $2.8 billion in new cash at the end of 07, beginning of 08. The fund was down 48% in 08, and investors pulled all their money out after that happened. And so they managed to hit a -11% return in a fund that made 18% per year.
Man.
That's investor behavior right there.
Yep.
That's, in a nutshell, this is why we don't want to. This is why it takes a matter of self-control. These investors went into this fund at the end of 07 thinking this is going to be a great long-term investment. And, of course, it turned out to be a long-term investment lasting about 6 months for the average investor. You know, and, you know, we go into these investments with this ideology, just kind of like relationships, Steve, that it's going to be a great thing. Everything's going to go well for us. And then 3 months later, we change our mind and we're not so enamored with that individual or the stock fund, whatever it might be. Because things don't work out the way we plan. demand, which in the market is always what happens. You know, we can't anticipate what's going to happen in the market. We can't anticipate when it's going to go up or when it's going to go down. And we just have to be able to stay with it and stay with our plan. And the thing is, if you have a plan for an investment, you've got to stay with it. You've got to have the discipline. If you don't have the discipline, you are out of luck. You're really in trouble. And I'll talk about a little bit after the break about Warren Buffett and a comment that I found he made in the book. Well, I guess I have time now to go into it. He said that he was grateful for the efficient markets hypothesis, Steve, where they said that you can't beat the markets and you should just buy an index fund. Warren Buffett said he was very thankful that for that because he appreciates them teaching all his competition to tell people not to think. He said it made his job a lot easier because it got rid of the competition because people basically stopped thinking and started buying index funds. And he said it made his job a heck of a lot easier to do. And he was very appreciative of the efficient markets theory because he does not subscribe to it, obviously. And he's proven, if anything, that it is not true.
Yeah, I think he's been successful enough to.
Yeah.
You can take his advice on stuff. All right. Well, if you'd like a free copy of today's book, it's called The Little Book That Still Beats the Market. You can call Dan's office at 918-398-8387, and he will cheerfully send you that free book. Do be sure and leave your name and address, because it's Sunday and there's nobody actually at the office today, and they need to know where to send the book. The number again, 918-398-8387 for your free copy of The Little Book That Still Beats the Market. You're listening to Money Talk on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Coming up here in about, a little less than 9 minutes, your top stories at the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and your forecast from Fox 23. Coming up next hour, it's Fox News Sunday. If you've got questions for us today, you can shoot us a text at 95920. Your host for Money Talk is Mr. Dan Witham, and he's giving away a little book that you might want to get.
I like this book. I like this book a lot. I like this strategy. The Little Book That Still Beats the Market. It's by Joel Greenblatt, the head of Gotham Capital, and also one of the characters in the movie The Big Short. It shows how he's averaged returns of over 40% per year for over a 20-year period. It's a stock selection method we're now implementing in my office, as a matter of fact, and I recommend you look at the book. If you want a copy of it, just give me a call at 918-398-8387. That's 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and your address. When you get our voicemail, we'll send it out to you. Absolutely free, no cost and no obligation whatsoever. And we've got JC sending out the books now, Steve. I've got him working hard. They're going out pretty quick now. They go out within a day or two of when we get the show over. So I'm pleased with everything, the way that everything's working now. Steve, I got a question for you about a house. Okay, we're going to talk about real estate.
Yeah, I'm the guy for that.
I live in one. That's my only qualification.
Okay. So what if you were looking for a house, Steve, and let's say you and Krista are out house shopping, and you come across a house that costs $300,000, right? And think that's within our price range, and it's in the right neighborhood.
Wow, you're doing good, Steve.
Yeah. So, well, let's just say it's in the right neighborhood, and you like the house, and you like the location, you like the school district, let's say, whatever it might be. You know, you like something about the house. And you say it's far enough away from your exes.
Can you truly get far enough away?
Strategically located.
Not in this modern age.
That's true. So anyhow, you like this house, and you don't buy it, but you look at it, and you think about it, and you go back and discuss it. And then a year later, the housing market goes into a correction, and that same house in the same neighborhood at the same place, the same distance from the exes, is now $150,000.
Okay.
Would you say that the house is more attractive at this level than it was at $300,000?
Yes, sir.
Would you say it's a better value at $150,000 than it was at $300,000? If it's the same house, exact same house, just the price has changed.
Yeah.
Right. It's a better value for you to buy the house, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All things being equal, shall we say. But yet, if this house were a stock, most people would be running for the exits.
That's a great point.
They not only would not buy this stock, they would sell it if they owned it.
That's exactly right.
But nobody would ever do that with a house.
That's a great analogy.
If you had a house that you paid $300,000 for and it drops to $150,000, I doubt you'd be in a hurry to run to sell it.
Nope.
At least I would hope not.
Nope.
Right? If you didn't have to sell it, you weren't forced to move.
Yeah.
Right. You would stay
there. Upside down.
You would stay there and wait for the house to come back up and value 5 or 10 years down there, whenever it might be. So the odd thing here is, and I've often said that investing is counterintuitive to individuals. This is why it's so difficult for us. This is why Warren Buffett is such the exception and not the rule as far as investing goes. It's so difficult for us. We cannot, and there's a couple reasons why this is true, why we do this with a house. Can you sell your house in 5 minutes?
I would have said no, but I know a guy who like a month ago or maybe 2 months ago puts a sale sign out in his yard.
Right.
And I think he said like 30 minutes later, somebody came by and bought it.
Wow.
But I will say, on the whole, that doesn't happen.
Okay. I will tell you that in my neighborhood, the houses that are for sale have been for sale for more than a year.
For a while.
On the average, more than a year. Yes. So most people, when they go to sell their house, Russell and Steve, wouldn't they go and like repaint the rooms and maybe put new carpet in?
Well, yeah, you fix it up, make sure it marketable. Looks good.
You're going to fix it up. You're going to spend some money. You're going to try to make it marketable. You're going to try to make it appealing. You add some landscaping, whatever it might be.
Add value.
So, right. So you're going to try to, you know, increase the price of it if you can. So it takes some effort and some energy and some cost involved in selling your house.
Yes.
Okay. So imagine if you could sell your house in 5 minutes for $7.
No.
Without having to paint the rooms, without having to redo the carpet, right, Russell?
Yeah, but for $7?
You can't.
I mean, it's cost me $7 to...
There's a method to my madness here. Okay. Just follow me. So, just bear with me.
Well, I'm trying to. So okay. Am I selling the house to someone for $7?
No, that's your
commission. Or it's costing me $7 to sell the house?
It's costing you $7 to sell the house.
I'm with you.
Yes, okay. I'm glad you clarified that. Thank you. So, but the problem is you can sell a stock in 5 minutes for $7.
Pretty good point.
This is part of the problem where the internet isn't our friend. It doesn't work to our advantage. Because if real estate were the same way, people would never keep their homes. People wouldn't live in them 20 or 30 years. Granted, now think about this. The other headache is, Steve, you got to pack all your stuff up.
That's true.
You got baggage.
Boy, do I.
Sorry.
Do I.
Phrasing.
Oh, Lord, man.
You got stuff.
Yes, I do.
You got stuff that won't fit in a U-Haul, right?
You know, though, what you make me think about, and we've talked about this in police work and military, but in our case, police work, I say don't run to your death.
Right.
Don't run to your death. Well, you could run to your financial death, too, doing that.
Absolutely. And people do it every day. You know, they buy their stock at $300,000 or $300 a share, whatever it might be, $30 a share. And then when it goes to $15, all of a sudden they think it's horrible. They liked it at $30, but they hated it at $15.
But it's a better deal at 15.
Correct.
And they need to be going buying more at 15.
If you think about it logically, it's exactly what it is. It's a much better deal at 15 than it was at 30. Okay.
Wait, so, what did Warren Buffett do in 08?
He bought a large position in Goldman Sachs.
Exactly.
And I will tell you something. I looked at Goldman Sachs' numbers last week. That company is a giant ATM.
Say, how's old Warren doing?
That company is a giant ATM, I'm telling you. Last year, their sales, their total revenues were $35 billion, okay? Their pre-tax earnings cash flow on $35 billion was $20 billion.
Man.
After they covered their expenses.
Wow. That's a pretty good profit margin.
He and Bobby Axelrod doing okay.
That's a huge profit margin. That's an incredible profit margin.
It is.
And that's a franchise that is just as good as any on Wall Street, better than anybody else on Wall Street. Their brand is just incredible. And I'm just telling you, you wonder why Warren Buffett stepped up and bought a bunch of them in LA. He's no fool. You know, the guy knows what he's doing. Okay. Magic Formula. Joel Greenblatt, the book we're talking about, the book we're giving away today, the little book that still beats the market. Magic Formula, Steve, it's really a two-step process.
Okay.
It's about as simple almost as simple as you can get. It has two ratios in it, which I'll go into a little bit
first before we decide that.
Okay. It looks at earnings yield and return on capital. And I'm going to explain what both of those are. Okay. Earnings yield and return on capital. What he does is he takes all the stocks in the universe above $50 million in market cap because he doesn't want tiny companies. And he ranks them based on earnings yield and return on capital. And he adds the two rankings together. And whichever stocks have the lowest total score or the highest ranking, if you will, in both categories are the ones he buys. And he tries to hold them for a year and a day, if they're gains, because we want long-term capital gains.
Right.
Lower tax rate. Long-term capital gains rate is half what the ordinary income rate is, roughly, ballpark. You know, right. It averages about half what the ordinary income rate is. So if your short-term gains rate, which is the ordinary income rate, is 20%, normally your long-term capital gains rate is about 10%, depending on what your income is. But the capital gains rate is always lower than the ordinary income rate, no matter what your income level, no matter what your bracket is, it's always lower. So we sell our losers just short of a year, so we have short-term losses, and then we sell our winners just after a year, so we have long-term gains. because you can use short-term losses to offset short-term gains and or short long-term gains. But you want to offset all your short-term gains. You don't want to have any short-term gains at the end of the day for tax purposes. All the CPAs out there are probably going, yes, that's correct. Everybody else is probably thoroughly lost at this point. We'll go into more after the break as far as what the ratios are and how they work. I'll explain them here in detail.
All right. We'll take a quick time out. Remember, if you'd like a free copy of today's book, The Little Book That Still Beats the Market, Dan's happy to send it to you free. Call his office at 918-398-8387. Do be sure and leave your name and address so they can send you that free book. 918-398-8387. More Money Talk after a quick timeout for the news on News 102.3 KRMG. Sweets for my sweet, sugar for my honey. Your first sweet kiss thrills me so. Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. I'm Russell Mills. Coming up in less than a half an hour now, it's time for Fox News Sunday. If you've got questions for us today here on Money Talk, well, we're live and local. We can answer them for you. Text us at 95920. Your host for Money Talk is Mr. Dan Witham. Mr. Dan Witham likes to give away books, and so he's going to do just that right now.
That's right. The book this week is The Little Book That Still Beats the Market by Joel Greenblatt, the one and only head of Gotham Capital. I love that firm name.
Gotham Capital. It just sounds impressive.
Gotta love that. Yes. Anyhow, you can get a free copy of this excellent book that tells you all about a strategy that's averaged a 40% return for over 20 years. We'll send you a free copy of it. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. 918-398-8387. The number to call, and just leave your name and your address when you get our voicemail. We will send that book out to you absolutely free. It is the weekend, so of course you're going to get a voicemail today when you call, and we'll send it out to you absolutely free. It's a great book. I encourage you to read it and try to follow it. You might have to reread it to follow everything. There's some math in there, Steve, and we're going to talk about some math here.
Oh, goody.
That's unfortunate.
I know you are excited. There's no math questions, though, Steve.
Oh, but you said it was sixth grade a while ago, and I'm already panicking, so...
You got your math book out?
Yeah. Are you smarter than a sixth grader?
Okay.
No, I'm not.
Okay. I mentioned two ratios before the break that this strategy looks at. It ranks the stocks based on two ratios, okay? Earnings yield and return on capital. And I'm going to try to explain what each of these are. Earnings yield is basically what we call EBIT, or earnings before interest and taxes, divided by the enterprise value of a company, and I will try to explain what that is. Earnings before interest and taxes is just what it sounds like. It's earnings with your interest and your taxes added back in, or your net earnings per share, if you will, for a company, with your interest and taxes added back in. It's divided by enterprise value, which is a firm name you probably haven't heard of. That is the market capitalization of the company, Steve, the number of shares outstanding times the price, plus the debt of the company, the total debt, plus the cash on hand. What we're trying to figure out is if you went to buy a company, Steve, if you wanted to buy Apple, this is what you'd have to pay.
Okay.
To buy Apple, you'd have to buy all the shares outstanding, plus you'd have to pay off the debt, but then you get the cash that the company has.
Yep.
And this is why it's called enterprise value. It's meant to be a broad term, a very broad term. What's the whole kit and caboodle worth? What's the whole thing worth at the end of the day? And you divide earnings before interest and taxes by that number. So the higher the number, the better at the end of the day. Okay, we want 15%, 20% or better, which means our earnings are higher in relation to the enterprise value.
Okay.
Does that make sense? The ratio higher because the numerator is the earnings before interest and taxes. So the higher the ratio, the more efficiently the firm is using its capital, the higher the return on capital. Does that make sense?
Yes.
To a degree? Okay. Or investors' capital, investors' money. The second ratio is return on capital, earnings before interest and taxes over fixed assets plus working capital. Now, you may wonder what working capital is.
That's the money in the bank that they've got to actually work with.
Money in the bank plus accounts receivable. Yes, a few other things, a few other small things, but mostly liquid assets and things like that. Yes, is working capital. How much money you have tied up in the enterprise. You know, for a company like Ford Motor Company, it's probably several billion dollars. It's going to be a lot of money. And or for Apple. Apple has, last time I checked, they had $100 billion in the bank in liquid assets.
Babies.
Yeah, the poor babies. They had more than the U.S. government in cash on hand. So.
Oh, man.
They're also a lot more efficient, obviously, at running an operation than the U.S. government has ever been or ever will be, regardless of who's
in
the White
House.
They
have a product people want. See the difference?
Yes.
Oh.
And they actually don't force you to buy their product.
That was a good one.
They don't force you to buy it either.
Right.
Which is just amazing.
All volunteer.
When you think about it, yes. Anyhow, so we look at these two ratios, and both of these ratios are determined the reason we use them, that Google Greenlight uses them, is he wants to know how efficiently the company is returning what the return is to the investors, how efficiently they're using their capital, how efficiently they're using their shareholders' equity and things like that. And companies that have, he wants, you know, lower fixed assets. Let me back up here a second. Fixed assets plus working capital takes out one huge asset out of the equation for many companies. And that asset is called goodwill. Now, a lot of people may not know what I'm referring to, but goodwill is what the brand name is worth. If it's a Coca-Cola, for example, goodwill is huge for a Coca-Cola or a Goldman Sachs. Let's just say goodwill is a huge thing. It's your brand name, what your brand is worth. Because how many places could you go in the world, Steve, where people have never heard of Coca-Cola?
Pretty much no place.
Probably nowhere, right?
But Bob Soda.
Papua New Guinea. I think there's some tribes up there that maybe.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, and somewhere, you know, in the Solomon
Everybody's
Islands.
Everybody's heard of it.
Yes, but most people know what Coca-Cola is, and right. Most people have consumed Coca-Cola. And so Coca-Cola's goodwill on their balance sheet is a huge asset. But it's not an asset that's used for the production of the goods. And so what we want to look at with working capital, their fixed assets would be their plant and equipment. Obviously, they have bottling plants and things like that in manufacturing where they make their product, yep. The syrup or whatever, and then they sell it, plus their working capital. So how much of the company's assets are really being used in the production and the sale of goods? And that's what we're looking at here. We're not looking at the goodwill, which is a huge asset, and it is worth some money. There's no question. It's worth
value.
You pay for that. Yeah, and Warren Buffett, by the way, he also owns a huge amount of Coca-Cola. By the way, yeah. Coca-Cola is one of his favorite stocks. You know, he said he bought it because he wants a product that costs a penny to make. You sell it for a dollar, and people are addicted to it. Well, that's Coca-Cola. Yeah, in a nutshell, that's what Coca-Cola
is. That's Warren being brutally honest right
yes.
there.
Yes, and that's what he likes. You know, that's the kind of enterprise that he enjoys. And, you know, Goldman Sachs has a reputation, goodwill. Their goodwill is tremendous in my business. Now, they may not be known in Papua New Guinea or wherever it is that Russell wants to go to. But I can assure you, everybody that works in my business knows who Goldman Sachs is. And there's not a person alive that works in my business. Because if you want to know who the smartest guys in the room are, just look at them. It's always going to be them, no matter what, no matter who it is, no matter who's in the room. It's going to be the Goldman Sachs guys. So anyway, what we're looking at is this is a strategy that A, looks at two things. Looks at the value of the enterprise. You're buying these stocks when they're undervalued, but you're also buying companies that have good growth in their earnings because these ratios go up when their growth is going up, basically accelerating and things like that. So it's a value and a growth strategy kind of combined is what this is. And that's probably part of why it's done so well over the years, because it's combining value with growth. You want companies that are not overpriced, but you want companies that have good growth potential at the same time. And there's a theory in our business called GARP. Wasn't there a movie called The World According to GARP.
Right. Robin Williams.
Okay. And I haven't seen the movie, but I will tell you this. GARP is a philosophy that we use, an acronym that we use in our business. It's called Growth at a Reasonable Price is what it stands for. So that's what this strategy essentially is, one of those types of strategies, growth at a reasonable price. You're trying to buy a good growth company at a low price, at a good value. And the reason he wants to hold these companies for 1 year and that's it is because he says these companies, you know, tend to improve fairly quickly in their price, and you don't want to hold them long term. He does not want to own them for 5 or 10 years. He wants to own them for 1 year and sell them just after the 1 year anniversary so we can get the long term capital gains rate, of course, which is just a tax issue. And that's really applies to tax non-qualified accounts, if you will, non-IRA accounts. In an IRA account, it doesn't matter because your tax still taxed the same way, no matter when you buy it or sell it in an IRA. That's just the way the tax code works, unfortunately. But I like this strategy very much. It's got some big names in it right now, Steve, some names you probably heard of. A little company called Alcoa, which you may have heard of.
I think I have.
Yeah, there's a little entity called U.S. Steel. It's been around a couple of years. And they've done okay over the years.
Yeah.
And steel companies are a little bit depressed on their price right now because of the tariff issue.
Exactly.
The China issue, if you will. And so the tariffs have actually hurt the steel producers, and there's no doubt about that. Tariffs always hurt the producers, in my opinion. This is my political opinion, if you will, but economic opinion. Tariffs always hurt the producers of the goods. They only benefit really the government. The government is the only party that benefits from a tariff, in my opinion, and that's just from an economic perspective. You know, hopefully the tariffs will go away at some point, and I think when that does, the U.S. steel will probably rebound and do quite well. And so there's a lot of good companies in there. There's some smaller companies in there, some larger companies in there, and some of the things that we're looking at with the strategy. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the nice things I like about the strategy is that you can expand or contract the number of stocks that you want to buy in the strategy. If you want to buy 5 or 10 stocks, you can buy 5 or 10. If you want to buy 20 or 30, you can buy 20 or 25 or 27 or 28 or 30 or 35. I probably wouldn't go above 30 because you really lose the benefit of diversification when you get above 30 stocks. There really isn't a huge marginal benefit, if you will, to be gained by going above 30 stocks. So it depends on the portfolio size, Steve. If somebody comes to me with $50,000, I'll probably tell them to buy 10 stocks. Yeah. If they've got 100 or 200, yeah, I might say 20, you know, 15 or 20, and then upwards of, you know, get up to about 30 when we get up to the $500,000 to $1 million range, depending on the portfolio size. But this is a sound strategy that has worked very well for Joel Greenblatt for many years. He's still running the firm up there and still doing it, still using it. And he's running a hedge fund as well and mutual funds and things. And so I've been impressed with it. I've known about the strategy for a long time, and this book's been around. When he wrote the first book, his first book came out in 2005, just before the 08 debacle. And so he's written other books ever since then, including this one that came out after that. And so he's done very, very well. And I've been, you know, very pleased with his results. And I said once before that, you know, net earnings or net earnings of a company are an accounting manipulation, in my opinion. So that's why he looks at earnings before interest and taxes, because you can impact
that's
your interest
kind of the real
taxes.
Number.
Yes. Taxes, as you know, are manipulated by accountants. That's their job. You have to lower your taxes, right, Russell?
Right.
You're always trying to lower your corporate, especially on the corporate side, they're trying to lower the corporate income taxes.
If you plan to stay in business, yeah.
And so that's one of the things that they're trying to do is show the lowest earnings possible. So we back those numbers out and try to use the earnings before interest and taxes for these numbers and these valuations. And if you want to know more about it, I guess you can call us and get a copy of the book.
You can. In fact, I'm going to tell you how to do that right now. That book is called The Little Book That Still Beats the Market. And that strategy has been working gangbusters now for 20 years. So if you'd like to read about it, why not get that free book? Call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Do be sure and leave your name and address so Dan can send you said book, or JC, whoever's doing that these days. I guess it's JC there at the office. The number again, 918-398-8387 for The Little Book That Still Beats the Market. Yours, absolutely free. More Money Talk after a timeout on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Coming up here in, well, just under 9 minutes, your top stories of the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and your forecast from Fox 23. And then next up after the news, it's Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. Always a great show. Questions for us today, you can text us at 95920. Your host is the book-giving guy, Mr. Dan Witham.
Well, thank you, sir. The book this week is The Little Book That Still Beats the Market by Joel Greenblatt, a great book. It's by the founder and runner, president of, owner of Gotham Capital. Someday I'll get the words out here. Sorry.
It's all those things.
Yes. Anyhow, we'll send you a free copy of the book, and he's averaged 40% a year over the last over 20-year period. His return's averaging 40%. We'll send you the book for free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. 918-398-8387. Just leave your name and your address, please, when you get our voicemail, and we will send that out to you absolutely free. No cost, no obligation whatsoever. Steve?
Yes, sir.
Freakonomics.
I'm all for it.
I know it's one of your favorite books.
Absolutely.
Follow the money.
Absolutely.
Follow the money.
Who benefits?
Who benefits and how do they benefit?
That's right.
So if somebody's telling you something, don't you wonder why they're telling you this?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ran into a client the other day that some guy on the web had some video or something that it was telling her that the market's overvalued, he said, because all the stocks in the world are worth, in the U.S. are worth, I don't know, like $30 trillion, whatever the number is. And he said there's only $3.5 trillion in money in the money supply, M1, which is the the smallest measure of money supply. M1 is only $3.5 trillion, but there's $30 trillion in stocks, so the market has to be overvalued. Well, my answer to that is, A, he's trying to sell something, which he was. He was trying to sell a newsletter to get you to subscribe to his newsletter. Yep. What a surprise. And B, the amount of cash on hand has absolutely nothing to do with the company. Right, Russell?
I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Well, let's say you own a
company.
Because
you're the money guy.
Let's just say you have a company, Russell, okay, and your company does $1 million in sales, and this year they net $100,000, right?
Okay.
And let's say they have $10,000 in the bank in cash. And next year, your company does $1 million in sales, but they net $200,000.
Yay.
Would you say their profitability went up?
I'd say, yeah.
Okay, so the company's probably worth more at that point, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. But let's say your bank account still has $10,000 in the second.
Oh, year. No, I'm going to go out of business any second, Dan.
That's right.
According to this guy.
Well, no. So what I'm trying to say is the value of your company is driven by the profits of your company. It's not driven by your bank
balance.
How
much money you have in the bank account. By,
that's just, that has the two are not related to each other. And so we have to keep that in mind. And don't let these people, there's always people out there that are trying to scare you to death, whether it's Glenn Beck or whoever, the people that are selling gold. You know, they've been selling gold and giving the same pitch for years, and it still hasn't come to fruition, still hasn't been true. And so you have to look at what are the earnings of the companies. The earnings of companies have increased dramatically over the last 11 or 12 years. They've increased exponentially, gone up quite a bit. And the economy is expanding. You know, last year we grew at, I think, just under 3% on GDP. Am I right?
Yeah, right about 3.
Right about 3% on GDP. So the economy is doing very well. You know, if you look at the unemployment numbers, people are having a hard time finding employees.
Employees.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's statistically zero.
Yeah,
right. 3% unemployment is people who can't be bothered to get up off the couch.
It's what we call a natural unemployment rate, which is about where right at 3 to 3.5% is the natural unemployment rate, where you can't go much lower than that. Statistically, the Fed says.
Exactly.
And so you know you're going to have some people that are unemployed because they're changing jobs or moving from one city to another. You're always going to have some people. So the economy is doing quite well. The companies are doing quite well. The amount of cash on hand has nothing to do with what the companies are worth. The amount of cash on hand and the velocity of money is how many times that money changes hands in a year. Our GDP is about $20 trillion. The cash on M1 is 3.5. So your velocity of money in the U.S. is about 6, which means that money changes hands about 6 times in a year to transact all those transactions. That's the only number that the M1 really impacts, that inflation. The growth of M1 would impact your inflationary number, of course.
Well, and I'll tell you, having done many, many news stories about scams over the years, mm-hmm. the scarier the pitch is, the more likely it is to be complete BS.
Yes, absolutely. And believe me, I've seen just about every pitch out there, you know, from over the years, from why you should buy gold and this and that. People were telling me that back in 08 and 09, people were telling me left and right that the dollar was going to become worthless. We were going to quit trading the dollar and that we would have to devalue our currency. And we were doing all kinds of things because the Fed was expanding the money supply and we were doing this or doing that. And China wasn't going to accept dollars and China's got all our debt. I can think of a whole bunch of reasons why, you know, the U.S. should have imploded in 09. But it didn't happen. It's still here, and the dollar's still being traded today.
Remember when all the people were like buying some Middle Eastern currency because they were going to change currencies?
The good old dinar.
Yeah.
Yes, and, the beloved dinar scam.
I know
yes.
several people that said they were doing it. Nobody ever came back to me and said, man, did that pan out?
Boy, cleaned up on the dinar. Yeah.
It's not legit. And if you ever wonder about one of these things, if you ever hear about something like that, just call me. I'll be happy to go over it with you. I'll be happy to say, yes, that's true, or no, that's not true, and I'll explain why. I don't have a problem with explaining why. You know, the value of companies in the United States is not determined by the amount of cash that we have on hand. It's determined by what the earnings of the company are and what the growth rate of that earnings is. Cash on hand has absolutely nothing to do with the company. If Warren Buffett goes out and buys a company, okay, Goldman Sachs,
yeah,
and he wants to buy them for $500 billion, let's just say, do you think he's going to go to the bank and ask the bank for, can I have $500 billion in ones, please? He's probably not going to do that.
No. Well, I mean, look at your own personal finances. How much cash are you carrying around? Probably not a lot. You might have 20 or 50 bucks in your wallet, but chances are you got a credit card. You're not carrying money around with you.
Well, and you have money in your real estate if you own a home.
Right.
You have money in your stock investments and other things, other investments that you might have. You might have land or something like that. They're all stores of value. Money is a store of value at the end of the day. That's really what it is, and a medium of exchange. It allows you to exchange one thing for another. You know, allows Steve to go to Sonic. Allows me to go to Raising Cane's after the show
and
every
Steve
day.
Steve goes to Sonic every Sunday on his way.
I do.
Yes, so we know where Steve's cash is. It's all at Sonic. Right.
Man, they ought to give me a certificate or something.
That's right. You ought to buy stock in there.
I should.
And it's not a bad idea. But anyhow, so to keep that in mind, the value of companies continues to go up. At times, it does go down. You know, we saw that in 08. The market pulls back. It's going to do that. But just remember the CGM Focus Fund. When that happens, don't dump it. Hang on to it. If you're buying it for a five-year hold period, hold it for 5 years. Yep. Don't hold it for 5 minutes or 5 weeks or 5 days or 5 months. Hold it for 5 years.
Or 4 years and 11 months.
Right. Yeah.
5 years means 5 years.
That's right. And so just remember that when you bought something, you had a hold period, a time period in mind. And even if circumstances change, that shouldn't change your time period. You've got to stick to your time period.
All right, guys, it's been a fun show. Remember, if you'd like a free copy of today's book, The Little Book That Still Beats the Market, call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. That number again, 918-398-8387.
888-398-8387. Be sure and leave your name and address so they can send you that book. Money Talks live and local on KRMG every Sunday from 10 to 11. The news is next. I'm Russell Mills. Have a great afternoon.